Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Thanks for being here tonight, spending some time with us. You know, over the next 4 hours, we will take a jaunt, a journey, a walk on the wild side, or at least on the other side of the veil, trying to make sense of or a connection to those who passed on, or maybe to understand other things that are floating around out there in the ether. It's one of the great mysteries of life. What comes next? Do we survive death? Does part of us live on? And if so, where do we go? You know, religions have their own answers. Spiritualists do, mediums, psychics, seers. Throughout history, we've tried to connect. Edison and Tesla vied for the rights to a communication device that might be able to bridge the veil, communicate with the dead. As with so many subjects that are of interest to the general public, science in general wants no part of this. When you're dead, you're dead. You're as dead and lifeless as a rock. And anyone trying to communicate with the dead is either wasting their time or engaging in something shady. So let's find out. In the first half of the program tonight, we'll talk to one of the best-known mediums in the country, Kim Russo, the happy medium, a best-selling author who's had a lifelong link with the other side, something that started in childhood. You might know her from her television programs, The Haunting Of, on Lifetime, which show profile celebrities who've had unusual, often very frightening encounters with something spiritual, sometimes dark. A new version of that show is coming soon to television, and Kim will tell us what she's got cooking coming up in a couple of minutes. In the second half, a true pioneer in the paranormal field, Dr. Barry Taff is a rarity. He's an academic and a man of science who's devoted his life to investigating an astonishing array of really weird cases and subjects. Call it paranormal or supernatural or just plain freaky. The cases he's tackled are ones that you probably know about, including famous and gruesome murder cases, murder sites. A few of his investigations have been the stuff of movies and TV programs. The Manson murders, for one. The infamous Entity case, allegedly involving a sexual assault by, call it, a spirit or a demon. Maybe you saw the film, same title, The Entity, and other cases that really do get the goosebumps jumping. Dr. Taff is here in the second half tonight with new information about some wild investigations that have led down some very dark pathways. Our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, and I have scanned various media sites around the world. We've pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities. We call it Knapp's News. You can find it on the Coast to Coast AM website. Among the items there tonight, a pair of new UFO-related articles, one from Robert Hastings, one of our favorite investigators. It's about an FBI agent's close encounter. Pretty compelling story. And something from Chris Mellon, an editorial he wrote, arguing in favor of legitimate UFO research by our government and military. We have a new angle on the Whitey Bulger case. You remember Bulger, right? The Boston mobster? He died months ago in prison. But now a juror thinks maybe Whitey got a raw deal. A scientist that we interviewed on this program a while back, Dean Radin, Dr. Dean Radin, argues in favor of scientific pursuit of what some might call the paranormal. We've got an interview clip in the Knapp's News, and there's a follow-up to one of the coolest viral videos of the year. Have you seen this one where a coyote and a badger go out at night together? It's not a joke. It's not like a coyote and a badger walk into a bar. It's a game camera that caught these two species as they headed out on a night romp or maybe a hunt. The story we have kind of gives some context to interspecies friendship. That and more in Knapp's News tonight. And while you're on the website, check out how to become a Coast Insider. If you subscribe for a year, the cost is pennies a day, gives you access to the huge archive of programs, hundreds and hundreds of programs, including the Art Bell Collection, classics all. You can listen as often as you want, anytime you want, day or night. It's a great deal. You can also subscribe to George Norrie's television program, Beyond Belief, which delves into strange and unusual subjects and features guests, great guests on many topics, And we're going to be talking more about George, who's going out on the road in the next couple of months, a little bit later in the program. That and more on the Coast to Coast website. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and the pet goat. Put on a pot of Joe. Slide your bod into the flannel jammies and your toes into those floppy-eared bunny slippers. Plop yourself down in a comfy spot. Turn down the lights and turn up the radio because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Kim Russo, the happy medium, takes us ghost hunting. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Kim Russo has been a guest on this program a few times in past years, in particular with George Norrie, but I've never had the chance to palaver with her about her fascinating career, and tonight we fix that. Kim is best known as the happy medium. That was the title of a book she wrote a couple of years ago. She started having these psychic connections to the other side, we'll call it, as a child, and it really scared her at first. Then she kind of got used to it, and now she makes the most of it, helping to sort of bridge the chasm between life and death, between this side and the other side. She's a best-selling author and a popular TV host. You've probably seen the Haunting Of series that she's hosted on Lifetime. It's soon going to be a new show that we'll discuss tonight. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Kim, good to have you here.
Oh, hi, George. Thanks for having me.
I know you have likely shared the story in the past, but I have never heard it, and I'd like to hear you tell it of how this started as a child. The first time it happened, your earliest memory of something that came through and how you reacted to it the first time.
Well, the first time I did share a bedroom with my sister, I was very young. I would say my earliest memory is around six years old. But around five is when I got electrocuted. And that's when things really started to become very busy at nighttime. I stuck a pin in the electrical outlet just as a curious child. Underneath the Christmas tree, I saw a safety pin just hanging out. And my curiosity got the best of me, as it always does. And I shot across the room, and my doctor said my arm would be burned for years to come, and I don't have a single scarring, which is so miraculous. But I believe after that, something opened up in my auric field, and my sister and I shared a bedroom, and I was terrified the first night I saw this group of strangers standing at the foot of my bed. And I would wake my sister up, and she wouldn't see. She would say, there's no one there, go back to sleep. But I knew I saw them. And I would go into my parents' room, and my dad would come in the room and humor me. He would check under the bed, in the closet. And he would just say, no, you know, whoever was there, they left. And I believed him. And then no sooner did he leave, there was always this street lamp that was shining through our window, and that pretty much put a light on these entities, because they appeared to me in like a human form for sure, but they were very transparent when the light would hit them. So if that makes any sense, I'm sure you've heard of that before.
Yeah.
Petrified. They just stared me down all night, standing at the foot of my bed. They never moved. They looked depressed. Now, as an adult, I can kind of figure out what they were thinking or feeling. But as a child, I didn't have any concept of understanding their plight. Why were they there? Why didn't they ever smile at me? They were just stoic and stared right through me. And I really slept with the covers over my head most nights.
I was going to say, that's the ultimate protection for a kid, right? Covers over your head, that makes everything go away. Not really.
Yeah. And if I close my eyes, they won't be there when I open my eyes, but then they were there. So it just, years later, I mean, many years later, after I got married and my father still did own that house, I found out that the people that lived in the same area was where I, in my bedroom, they also, their two children also saw spirits in that room, but they're relatives of mine, so I think it's in the family. But
do you remember the first time? You remember the first time there was actual communication where you got a message either psychically or heard it with your ears or whatever, what it said or who it was?
Well, interesting. As a child, I never got messages. It was just seeing them, knowing they were there, following me to school, following me. I always felt them on the nape of my neck, in back of me. It wasn't until I was in my late 20s that there were a few events that happened one after another, one being the fact that my uncle died tragically out in California. And after he passed away, I started, and my third child was born. It was after I was done with all my kids. The spirits were back, but with a vengeance. Like, they came now with a voice. And I didn't know how to shut it off. I was just hearing names in my head all day long. You know, I'm Susie, I'm Bob, I'm Jim, I died in a car accident, I died in a fire. And they were all these, I thought I was going crazy, really. I knew I was hearing what I was hearing. And there was this desperate plea for me to get to their family and to tell their family that they're okay. And I'll never forget, I put my little guy down for a nap, and my other two were in school at the time. And I was making my bed, and it was a beautiful sunny day. And I turned to pick the pillow up to put it on the bed, and there was a silhouette of a girl in my doorway, my bedroom doorway. And it happened so fast that her mind was speaking to my mind. And telepathically, I heard her tell me that she died in a fire. And she turned her face, and it was like all charred. So that didn't make sense to me, because from what I had known at that time, when you go to the other side, you don't have any problems. You don't take your body with you. But mentally, she told me she was from New Jersey, and she told me her parents' names and that I should call them and tell them, please contact them and tell them I'm okay. She told me her name. I didn't take any notes because I had no intention of calling anyone, because I didn't even think it was real. I thought I was imagining it. And then one thing led to another, and the voices just they didn't stop from that point on. And I wouldn't say any specific event happened, except that I think they knew I was done having my children. And I believe that they were reminding me that to remember what my mission was in this life. It's as if they were bringing me back to my memory of, okay, you were supposed to be a mother first, but now you need to be our voice. That's pretty much how I felt. It wasn't easy.
Have you developed a sense of how it works? You know, because it's the central question of human existence, or one of them. What happens next? You know, where do we go? And religion has its answers. Some religions tell us it's heaven and hell, one or the other. And that doesn't seem to fit with what the experiences are of these things that are somehow caught in the middle, or that we go somewhere else, and that there is the idea that we can communicate across this veil, whatever it is. That's hard for people of science to accept, although a lot of them have had experiences themselves and probably don't want to talk about it. How does it work, do you think?
Well, that's absolutely correct. And for me, it was even harder, because I was raised a Christian, and we were very Christian in my home, meaning I was actually taught that this is taboo, you do not touch this, you don't go near this, it's from the devil. I was taught all of that. So when I was trying to avoid these entities, they were coming to find me. So I had to really figure out, it was not my intention to contact them, but why are they contacting me? So again, curious as I am, I tried to read every book out there, but at the time there was not many books when I was developing and when I was trying to understand what this was. But as my journey continued, I realized, and I'm very science-minded, science-based, I always really do like to know how everything works. And I don't think it's hard to understand that when you bring up Einstein and you bring up Tesla, that's my language. And it's the language of energy. And that is science. And if energy cannot be created nor destroyed, why wouldn't the energy just transmute or change form? Like, to me, that was the most logical explanation. Why wouldn't consciousness survive? And then I brought it back to the religion, where they say you will never, you'll always see your loved ones again when you get to heaven. I mean, they did teach us that. So I needed to take religion out of the equation in order to accept and understand what was happening to me physically, mentally, spiritually, and I just really break it all down to science, that it's energy, and we are energy, and we are pure consciousness, and the bonds of love are way too strong to ever be severed or for us to never exist again. Just common sense tells me that doesn't make sense, because the heart is, you know, if you ever love someone so deeply, you know that physical death can never take that away. And so if you just think of it that way, that this can't be all there is, and then the science proves it, you know, really, I've been tested so many times. I've been in laboratories with all kinds of EKGs and EEGs on my head, and they want to know from me, what are you doing? Because we're looking at you on a monitor through a screen, through the wall. You're not moving a muscle, and all of this activity is happening on the screen. And they want to know from me, what am I doing? And I said, well, I'm communicating with the other side. And, you know, scientists need logical explanations. They're really not buying that, but they're still trying to figure out all this activity they saw on their screen.
Yeah, I'm wondering, what are they measuring? Just levels of brain activity or particular kinds of brain activity?
All different kinds. And I have to be honest with you that I don't know the technicality of it, because they were not able to discuss their experiment with me, except for the fact that I know they were measuring my brain waves. I knew they were looking for changes in my brain waves while I was actually doing a mediumship readings. So what they would do is they would give me a name of a deceased person, and I would just have to go, like, just a name. And then I would tune into that entity or energy, and I would just give them all of the information I was receiving, whether it be words, images, thoughts, feelings, sounds, whatever I picked up. And in that time, they were seeing all this activity going pretty haywire on their end, and they're looking at me, and they said, typically our machine does this when the you know, the sitter is moving, but you were sitting as still. They were watching me through the wall, and they said, you didn't move a muscle, and we had all this activity. I said, well, I was raising my vibration in order to connect to the other realm. So they don't understand that language. But I love to mix the two worlds, because it really is all one. We just have to prove it. And we're working on it.
Did they do follow-up work, like to check out? So they give you a name, and you project out and sort of retrieve information. And is there, happen to know?
They give all the feedback to the families of the deceased people. Now, this last test that I did, I didn't receive the results of the accuracy. And they actually told me, we're not testing you for accuracy. We're testing you for while you are in your conversation with, and as they put it, whoever you are communicating with, we would like to see what happens to your brain, a picture in live time what's happening. That's really why they did that. And I've been tested with other organizations of accuracy, the Forever Family Foundation, the Wimbridge Institute of Science. They tested double blind, triple blind tests just to connect the accuracy. And that's why I get involved in these experiments, because
I'll tell you what, Kim, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to get into some of the cases that you worked on, many of which have been on television. We're talking to Kim Russo, the happy medium. I mentioned at the top of the program that George Norrie would be taking his live stage show out on the road again this year. He's got some dates coming up that we're going to share with you tonight. You can also find this information on the Coast website. One of them coming up in Houston, Texas. Good Times in Texas, they're calling it. Saturday, June 13th, 2020. It's at the Hobby Center for Performing Arts in Houston. And among the guests with George, author and madam of the Texas Macabre, Tui Snyder, Conjure Doctor Mama Star, Major Ed Dames, remote viewer. You got a live band. There's audience participation, a meet and greet after the show. I've been to these things. They're a lot of fun. So if you want some information, we've got the links on where you can find out and buy tickets. Tickets are on sale already, so we'll check that out. We're talking with Kim Russo, the happy medium. And coming up in this segment, we're getting into some of the celebrity encounter cases that she's assisted with and investigated. Gina Gershon, for example, Vanessa Williams, one of my favorites that she did, Meatloaf, the great Meatloaf, the haunting of Meatloaf, as well as Wayne Newton from here in Las Vegas, Vince Neil, Joanna Cassidy, and my wife, Morgan Fairchild. That's a joke. We'll be right back with more right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Kim, before we jump into some of the better-known clients and folks that you've helped, I want to talk a little bit more about you. So at an early age, you start seeing these things. Then it sort of goes away, and then you're in your 20s. You've had your kids. You're married, and the voices come back in a big way, and you really are questioning your sanity. Tell me the first time that you took the plunge and bravely took the leap and acted on the information that you got, where one of these spirits or whatever it is communicates some information that's to be passed along to their family, and you actually acted on it. You remember?
Oh, wow. Yes, of course. They were all happening all at the same time. When it first started, it was fast and furious. There was one time where I was at a diner eating lunch with a friend, and actually she was also a medium. And there was a man and a woman sitting next to us in the booth, and I kept hearing the name Faye. And I said, I think there's a deceased loved one to the people next to us, and they keep yelling the name Faye. So my friend said, well, I think you should deliver the message. That's why the message is coming. But I was very new, and like you said, I didn't want to act on it. I was afraid it would be wrong, and I didn't want to make a fool of myself. So she said, if you don't give them the message, I will. I will tell them you have a message. So she was really pushing me. So I went over to them, and I interrupted their lunch, and I said, excuse me, this may sound very strange, but I am a medium, and does the name Faye mean anything to you? And the woman stood up, and she started hysterically crying, and she said it was her deceased son. And I said, your son's name is Faye? And she said, no, that's his last name. He was from my other husband. And I mentioned a couple of other things, that she knew it was her son, but they were in disbelief. So was I. And she asked me if I did readings. And I said, well, actually, I don't. And she said, well, if there's any way I can contact you, here's my number. And then actually I was doing readings, and she somehow found me, and she came for a reading. And it was quite emotional. And I mean, someone's son came through while I was eating. I was kind of glad I delivered that message, because it was heartfelt, you know, and I have children. That was one incident. And then it didn't stop from that point on. They were just everywhere I went. I didn't know how to turn it off back then. So I was free range to all the spirits to kind of try to get attention.
At some point, you decided, all right, I'm going to act on this. I'm going to be a medium. I'm going to help connect people to loved ones, and the heck with it. Skeptics be damned. You know what comes with this territory. You know how mediums and crystal ball readers and things of that sort have been treated over the centuries, right?
Oh, yeah, and that's, I had a big problem with that because I am, even my mom said at the time when it was happening, people would ask her, you know, how do you feel about Kim with this gift? And she did say, just knowing my daughter and how level-headed she is, if it happened to anyone else, I might not believe it. But because it's happening to Kim, who questions everything, she says, I believe it because she's not some gullible person. And I was in real estate. That was my line of work. I was a real estate manager, and I prided myself on being logical, practical, and down to earth. And here this gift comes that you can't prove it, you cannot explain it. But I made it my mission to really de-scramble this from a hooky kooky kind of crystal ball, you know, and a charlatan reputation that everybody has with this gift, to really bringing the science behind it. So when there's mediums out there that say, I don't know how this works, I'd like to say, yeah, I do know how this works. And that's the only way that I'm able to do this, is because I am understanding the science of it. So.
And also, it makes you feel good, right? Because occasionally you help people.
Oh.
You make them yeah. feel better. Yeah.
Quite a bit. This gift is all about helping people. And I always say I work for the other side as well. I don't only work for this dimension. And I found that out over the years when I was doing readings, and certain people would try to filter through that had regrets and wanted to make things right and close up some loose ends, and the living didn't want to hear of it. And so I was this intermediary, medium, and I'm like, listen, I work for both of you. I'm just the messenger. And there's been so many healings that have happened between bridging the two realms. It's not too late once we lose our loved ones. It's never too late because they can hear our thoughts. You don't even need a medium. You could talk to them yourself.
When it comes to TV paranormal shows, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. You're aware of this. You see what else is on the air. And I watch them. Now and then I kind of put them in my gray basket because, you know, it ranges from just flat out ridiculous to really interesting. But a lot of it is, you know, it's a questionable value. I find I watch it and with sort of a willing suspension of disbelief. I find your show to be the Haunting of to be really entertaining. And some of your celebrity guests have really surprised me. I'll start with this one. Today it was Meatloaf. Meatloaf is kind of a tough guy and a nonsense guy. He really surprised they would be interested in going along with this, but you'll watch the progression of his experiences. He had had something profound that happened to him that really scared him, and he was pretty scared during the course of this haunting that you sort of walk him through. Share with us how that came about, what you helped him learn, and what the effects were.
You know, Meatloaf was an interesting character, very interesting, because he came in with such passion for, you could really tell that the experience he had shook him to the core. He never forgot it. And even to this day, he was so passionate about speaking to that entity, whatever it was. I remember it was in Bearsville, New York, in a recording studio. And the energy was so palpable, we could really, he felt it. And I feel what I taught him that day was, all those years ago, he could have stood up to this energy, whatever it was, but he didn't know how. He didn't know how to. And then Meatloaf's mother came through at one point of the episode and set him straight as well. So I feel like there was some eye-opening revelations for Meatloaf that, interestingly enough, brought him back to being like a little child. He was very interested interested. He was all ears. I saw the change in him, too. I know what you mean from the beginning when he first came on and then as the show progressed. He was really, if you saw the show in the bedroom, he was really angry talking to the ghost and trying to get this energy out. And so he was standing his own ground. I think that's what he learned. Stand his own ground, and he doesn't need a medium to do it. So I think I kind of helped give him the courage to find it within himself and the confidence.
Well, I thought the interesting part was, so you see he's kind of on edge from the beginning of the show. And of course, I don't know how it's edited and everything put together, but he's on edge. And there's a noise upstairs. He's kind of on edge. And then you tell him something about his mom, his dead mom, that kind of floored him. It's that she had appeared to him after she died, something that he had never shared with anybody else, and he confirmed that was true, right?
Well, right. That's one of the reasons I believe she came through at that point in the day or night, whatever it was, I don't recall. Well, typically we do this at night. And I see the change instantly when they see this is real. I've had many celebrities want to shut all the cameras when I start getting real with them, with their real family, their real life, their real secrets. And they're like, is this some sort of joke? And the producers have to convince them, no, Kim is not an actress. She is a medium. And I cannot tell you how many people or celebrities come on the show thinking that we're going to just have a fun ghost-busting day, and I'm going to just tell them what they were experiencing, and they'll go on their way, not realizing how deeply connected their haunting is attached to their own trauma or what's really haunting them inside. So, yeah, you're 100% right. His mother, I think that was a key player in his life, for sure. And that rocked him. That really got to him. He was so much fun.
There was a case with Vanessa. Yeah, well, he seems like a really great guy. Vanessa Williams, actress, singer. She's having problems at her home. There's a line from that episode where you tell her that you're going to help her get rid, and I'm quoting, get rid of whatever it is. Meaning, meaning what? Meaning it might be something other than a dead relative or other than a ghost, a spirit, a poltergeist. What else?
After over 80 episodes, I have to try to zero in. If I remember correctly, there was a man that was working on a pole in her backyard, on an electrical pole, and he was electrocuted and he fell to his death. If I remember correctly, that was the episode. And I remember that man he didn't go to the other side. And so we did this little ceremony in her living room, and we very lovingly sent him on his way, and that was somebody who was not supposed to be there, and he was causing all kinds of havoc. I just think he wanted her attention because he knew he wasn't where he was supposed to be. So not everything is what it seems. Sometimes these are just souls that lost their way, and they're staying in the area of their sudden death because it was such a shock. Some of the souls don't even know what happened to them. And it's really a matter of, like, if I always say, if you find a lost child in a store, you would take that child and bring him to the store manager or try to get him to his rightful owner. And it's no different with these souls that a lot of times can't find their way home. And that's what that episode was, I recall.
You know, we've all seen ghost movies, so we know the general routine, the rules that, you know, come along with movies anyway, is that a building or a house might be haunted because there was a terrible murder there, or because it was built over an Indian graveyard. I mean, that spirits, whatever, attach themselves to a place. What about spirits that attach themselves to a person? So somebody, no matter where they live, they've got haunted poltergeist-type stuff following them around. Do you have any of those cases?
Well, that happens on an everyday basis to everyday people, whether we know it or not know it. it doesn't have to be this big, tremendous case. It could be someone who has health issues and that came out of nowhere and they don't know what it is. And they say, you know, I'm tired, I'm fatigued, I feel like I'm carrying two people around. So many times they go to doctor and they get diagnosed with chronic fatigue, which I'm not diminishing. That's a very real diagnosis, and I'm sure a lot of people really do have it. But you do have to be careful where you go, what you open yourself up to, how you protect yourself, who are the people you surround yourself with, because negative energies will flock to the negative people, and they can attach themselves on a daily basis. Now, that doesn't mean poltergeist. That doesn't mean they're going to be there forever. It could mean something as you just have to send them on their way, whether you know who it is or not. You have to demand that they leave and detach from your energy. And when I do a lot of readings, I can see some leaks in people's energy fields where these entities can get in, like through the solar plex area. If they have a weak gut area, they can get in there. It depends where they want to attach themselves. And then, yes, there are more defined cases of, demonic entities that can attach. I typically don't get into the exorcisms. I leave that for the priests. I've been very lucky where I haven't encountered anything dark, except for Pennhurst. I have to say, that was bad. The Pennhurst Asylum in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Tell us what you encountered.
What'd you run into?
There were evil souls of real people. And that's the other thing. People think that, they could just be demons on the other side. There are demons in real life. You know, we work with some demons. We surround ourselves. They're out there. And the people that worked at this asylum when it was a mental hospital back when, they were just so cruel, and they would treat these patients just horribly. The atrocities that happened to these patients were just not to be believed, because they didn't think they were real people. They treated them like animals. And those evil people were kind of stuck there at Pennhurst. And it still happens today. There was an evil doctor. They did things for greed. You know, they were paid under the table. There was a lot of shady stuff going on in that hospital back in the day.
We're going to go to a break here in about 30 seconds. But on the other side, I want to ask you about, you're careful to not do your own investigation of these places before you go in. You want a sort of a clean slate. And then afterward, you piece things together. But I want to get into a little bit further on the dark stuff that you might encounter, or that other mediums have encountered over the years. And then some of your celebrity clients, Loretta Lynn, Ernie Hudson, Wayne Newton, Las Vegas legend. There's a lot of cool ground still to cover here. We're talking with Kim Russo, the Happy Medium.